Now we are going to discuss the higher states of transcendental experience in the Patanjali system. So, till now, Patanjali has been dealing with the methods for refinement of mind, how to make the mind ready for higher concentration, and what are the requirements, and how to confront the obstacles and problems that we may have to face in our path or journey in yoga on the way to samadhi. That samadhi is designated by the word samapatti in this particular sutra. So I shall try to connect the topic of discussion on the next sutra with what we already discussed earlier at the very beginning of Yoga Sutra classes. Then it becomes very clear. Now, at the very beginning of Yoga Sutra, I mean, especially when we are dealing with the the earlier sutras, that is Atha Yoga Anushasanam and Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha, these two sutras. Atha Yoga Anushasanam is the first sutra in the Samadhipada. Now we are going to discuss yoga. That's the meaning of this particular sutra, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now onwards, we are going to discuss yoga. So there are a few words, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. There are three words here. Yoga, that's the topic of discussion in the whole text. Atha means now onwards. Now, what is the real implication of the word now onwards? So, different commentators, mostly modern commentators, like the author of Bhasudhi, Hariharananda Saraswati, and others, Rajamartanda, Bhoja, King Bhoja. So, they all discuss this subject. What is the meaning of Atha? When do you turn to yoga? Or when do you turn to spiritual life? When do we turn to some higher life? When do we begin to think of practicing some higher values in life? Especially something that we are not familiar with, something which is not empirical, which we cannot relate in terms of our ordinary activities and the results and benefits. Something very abstract. But if you do physical exercise, you develop bulging muscles. And if you do yoga, the hatha yoga, the physical yoga, then also there are some very visible, very feasible, scientifically demonstrable benefits which any doctor will tell you. But here, the yoga as a way of spiritual life, it is something not very tangible, it is something abstract, subtle. So, how can we really bring our mind into practicing something higher, the benefits of which may not be obvious to us, when we have already knocked at all other doors, when we feel the need for some higher contentment, or when we experience a kind of what you call divine discontentment, dissatisfaction, then we start thinking of, well, what is beyond this? Is there some higher value, something higher, something transcendental, something that is beyond the visible, beyond the empirical? And then we may start reading a book on philosophy, mysticism, spirituality, and so on. Till then, we don't turn to that. Now, this incidental connection with yoga or spiritual value could happen as a result of our cultural development, our association with people, who are practicing some higher values, that may prompt us to think of practicing some higher values due to compulsions or circumstances. So at that stage, you start thinking of something higher. That is the meaning of word atha here. Now onwards. Now we are going to discuss yoga. The second sutra is very important from what we are, from the standpoint of what we are going to discuss today. Yoga ha chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is nothing but, it is at that state in which all the vrittis of the mind are restrained or transcended. The word restrained may not be a very accurate translation of the word nirodha. Nirodha involves restraining and also transcending. When you have just succeeded in restraining, there is no certainty that you won't fall back into its trap again. When you transcend, when you go beyond it, willingly, with full consciousness, with total freedom, you go beyond it. So if you want, you can save yourself, prevent yourself from falling back from the path of yoga. There is freedom in it. So it is called in Vaishya that there is freedom. In the other state, in Sanskrit, it's called avasha. You don't have freedom. You are still within it. Only for the time being, it's not, the problem is not there. So, now, what are vrittis? And what's the meaning of the nirodha vrittis? In fact, that is the subject of discussion in the particular sutra that we are taking up today. So, you find those who have got the text, we can see the sutra, 41st sutra of Samadhipada. So, yoga ka chitta vritti nirodha ka is the second sutra of Patanjali system in the Samadhipada. It is directly linked to the 41st sutra of the same chapter. What is this 41st sutra? It is kshina vrittehi abhijadasya manehi iva grihitra grahana graheshu tatstha tatanjanata samapattihi. It is a very complicated word, but our whole word explains the very dynamics, the psychological, the spiritual, and the philosophical dynamics of nirodha. So what is nirodha, as I mentioned? When you transcend, you go beyond it. You have the freedom, if you want, from falling back into its trap again. When you have just restrained, still there is the risk and danger of you falling back into it completely. So, for example, I can give a very, very simple example from modern life. People who are obsessed with alcoholism and drug addiction, or let us say even minor problems like children getting obsessed with sports to the extent of completely forgetting their responsibilities as students. Different kinds of obsessions. Now, if for some time you are able to put a man where there is no drugs available or no alcohol available, he may, if it's not a very advanced chronic case, he may be able to put some restraint on himself. But there is no freedom in it. He may have got some instructions, even advice. Even in that case, he may be able to restrain himself from the clutches of some vrittis. Vrittis in their grossest dimension means habit formations, which catch you by the throat, taking your freedom away from you, when it makes you into, it rather, it enslaves you. When an habit becomes a master and you become the slave, it is called obsession. Okay, now, suppose the same drug addict is completely cured and by practicing some higher values, associating with some higher spiritual personalities, he completely alters his value concepts and is able to remain in a place where drugs are available, alcohol is available. Still, he won't go near that. He is transcending it. In the other case, there is still slavery, psychological slavery, because there is still the trap and he is likely to fall back to the trap. But when he transcends, he goes beyond it. There is freedom in it. So, in Niruddha state, or yoga, when you reach the yoga chitta vritti nirodha, when you transcend the vrittis, vrittis are your servants. And you don't like to employ servants who may take away your money, your wallet, your credit card, and your ID, passport, everything. You don't want such servants. So you'll naturally keep them away. So you transcend. You have the freedom to dismiss and to get rid of those people. And see, this is an example of Nirodha. Now coming to this, so this sutra is very, very important. And unfortunately, I would tell you something very important. Unless we study the sutras from a very traditional teacher, who has studied from another traditional teacher, who again has got it from another traditional teacher, the real meaning of these implications of the sutras do not reveal themselves. It is a link, what you call a succession of teachers, coming all the way from Patanjali and his disciples and their disciples. Many of them wrote books. In fact, all the great commentaries that you read about, that you hear about. See, the latest, the Rajamartanda and Bhaswati. Rajamartanda was written by King Bhoja. Bhaswati was written by Hariharananda Saraswati, who lived maybe about 120 years before, earlier. And there are many other books written, you know, after Patanjali. Vyasa wrote, Shankaracharya wrote a commentary on Vyasa's commentary, then Vajaspati, Vijnana Bhikshu. So, many of these later commentaries. So they were all great teachers and they were also great students who belonged to this succession. Now, let us focus on this sutra. Kshinavritti, that's the first word. Kshinavritti means somebody whose vrittis have become kshina, weakened. So what are vrittis? Vrittis we'll explain. In that state, a spiritual teacher, a spiritual aspirant reaches samapatti, or that particular state. Samapatti is the state in which the chitta, the mind, with all its vrittis, greatly weakened, like a pure crystal, attains concentration and clarity with regard to grahya, grahana, and grahitra. This meanings here. Grahya are the objects that we pursue. Grahana are mind and senses with which we pursue the objects. Grahida is the perceiver. These are all technical terms. It becomes very, very simple and clear in course of time. So it takes, we may need one or two sessions for completing this particular subject. So first we must understand what is the meaning of the word Kshinavritti. Kshinavritti is a person whose mind has succeeded in weakening or transcending the vrittis. What are vrittis? Vrittis are nothing but the residual effects of our actions, either in this life or previous life. In a way, it is obsessive habits are the most visible manifestations of vrittis. It's a subtle word. Let us say when we have done certain things, we have undergone an experience with full awareness in which our mind was very alert, our experiences will register a memory or impression, a residual effect in our mental system. Long after that experience is over, or long after we have finished that particular work, that work or that experience will leave behind something, some, let us say, footfalls, some, it we call, memories are nothing but manifestations of these vrittis. To give an example, what is memory? Memory is nothing but mind traveling backward on time. That's what memory is. When you remember a person's face, when you remember an episode, or when you remember a poem, or when you remember something you have read in a book, your mind is traveling backward. And your mind has reached the particular point where you have met a particular person. Depending upon the intensity with which that experience has registered itself as a memory, your memorization, your remembering will be more vivid, or it may be less vivid or more vivid. So memory is nothing but mind traveling backward. As the mind traveling backward, it meets many people. You remember the faces, events, episodes associated with many people. It again re-experiences, relives things and episodes that have happened long ago. Mind is traveling backward. So how does the mind travel backward? It needs a road, a trail. All these experiences have created a track on the mental system. And mind follows that track. Those whose tracks are very clear are able to remember the event, the episode, more vividly, more easily, and more effortlessly. Where there are conflicting memories, then you find they interlink. I can give an example. You see, in our Ramakrishna order, frequently our monks, very often, you know, India has got 17, 18 ancient languages with vast literary outputs. Most of them are much older than French or German or English, all of them. And Sanskrit is almost 6,000, 7,000 years old. Now, some of our monks who leave their home state, they visit their home state after spending 60, 70 years in another part of the country. When they go back, they still try to speak the old language which they have picked up. So once I suggested a language expert, you can bring a recorder, and if you are interested in research, the way this Swami speaks this language gives you an idea how this language is spoken some 80 or 70 years back. Why they reproduce the same language? Because the memory line is very vivid. He has not spoken that language for the last 50 years. He lives in the same place, he won't be able to remember the old style pronunciation so clearly. So the wide gap leaves the track neat and clear. So when we travel backward, we meet people whom we have met long back. We re-experience episodes and events we have experienced long back. So we are traveling backward. Okay, now when you travel backward, you are actually connecting with vrittis. Those actions are over. Experiences over long back. You still remember what happened 50 years back. And mentally you are connecting with it. Mentally. See, if you think of some songs or poems, like poets, which you have memorized when you were 5 years, 6 years, 10 years back, 10 years old, you are able to still remember. When you remember, you know, you're hearing it. Remembering a song means hearing it again. But sound waves are not falling on our eardrums. No, nothing. by mentally you are hearing, you are re-experiencing. Again, when you remember a visual effect, you are seeing again, not with your eyes, because the picture or the movie or something you have seen maybe 50 years back, you can't see right now, but you see still. So why? Vrittis are coming, re-emerging from this, from a system, mental system. It's called chittam. So these vrittis re-emerge and come to the surface and you connect with it. And immediately you remember a movie you have seen 50 years back or a song you heard 60 years back, because you are reconnecting. So when mind travels backward, these vrittis are the route, the track, the trails, the highway through which the mind travels backward. And they connect with these vrittis. Now, when you reach the niruddha state, when you transcend vrittis, these vrittis are all subsided. So long as vrittis are there, you have no freedom. Vrittis are obsessive habits. Vrittis manifest in the grossest form as obsessive habits or habit formations. So, now what are vrittis? That again we had to discuss. So, I already mentioned to you, now the second sutra in system is Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Vrittis, I already explained this briefly long back, but I shall try to explain again. This is very, very important. Vrittis are fivefold. All vrittis are fivefold. Every kind of vritti falls into one of these five categories. And some of these vrittis are found in their most manifest form in some pathological cases or among people who are morons, who are habitually restless, who don't have much, you know, who are suffering from lack of attention span and can't concentrate on anything for a long time. And in some cases, it could be some kind of what we call in modern times, you know, the bipolar systems, where, you know, a patient becomes suddenly active and gets fatigued, tired, then again he becomes inactive. So the pendulum moving from one end to the other end. In its abnormal case, it is called kshipta. In its normal state, it is called vikshipta, which we are going to discuss now. So the first condition of vritti is called kshiptam. So kshipta state is when the mind restlessly moves about without any inclination towards concentration, focusing on some idea, some value, some activity or something. It is again a kind of pathological abnormal state. In fact, Hariharananda, who lived not long back, he wrote a book called Bhaswati. He says, Yada sattva samadhana chikishahinam sadeva astiram bhavati. Oh, astiram bhramati, it means. Where the mind, astira means restless. Habitually restless. People who cannot read anything, could do anything. Of course, we are not going to discuss at length the abnormal states. I am going to focus on the latest two states, vikshipta, egagra, and niruddha state. The three states, we deal with the normal states of human mind. The second state, which again belongs to the abnormal category, is mudha state, where, mohavasya chittasya mudhavastha sa mudha bhumihi. This is a definition given by Vajaspati, great commentator, who incidentally was a Buddhist. This state, you know, where a person becomes passive, a state of total passivity, created by a strong, repressed conflicts of intense passion. So there is no activity, The mind is full of conflicts, passions, desires, but there is no activity. The same condition produces restlessness, unfocused activity in a person who cannot concentrate on anything. That is Kshipta state. Mudha state, the same condition, but total passivity. The person is in a state of total passivity. This is one condition of vritti. The third condition is called vikshipta, which is very similar to normal human beings. They go about doing their work, responsibilities and duties. They are able to do things properly when they are interested, but mind doesn't remain concentrated or focused on one higher ideal for a long time. Well, to give an example, the vikshipta state is common for all people. People who work very hard in the offices, lot of competition, lot of intense activity, dynamism, efficiency, of course. But then they need, after that, you can't expect them to read Meister Eckhart or Kant or Hegel. They want something what we call the left of the stream. Now, that's a real problem, If extreme efficiency, extreme focus, and dynamism and success can be continued or sustained without the need to let off the steam, they will become yogis. So yoga helps you to avoid the need to let off the steam. Otherwise, that's why, then next day again they start working very efficiently, with great focus, with great success. Many of the great businessmen, captains of industry, scientists, intellectuals, many intellectuals, I used to give the examples of Dostoevsky's archetypal example, so I won't give you example again, So he wrote The Grand Inquisitor, was totally drunk, was submerged in vodka, and that man wrote Grand Inquisitor in the fifth chapter of the fifth book of Brothers Karamazov. Many of these people, many great artists, musicians, creative writers, they do great work. But then the mind reaches a very high level. In the tradition of the Shat Chakra is called Ajna Chakra, where level of consciousness reaches a very high level. It is lifted off the biological drives, lifted off the lower biological passions, where you can focus yourself, your attention, energy on great creative work. It could be you may be a scientist, an artist, musician, a painter, novelist, and so on. But after that, you need something to let off the steam, as we call in modern times. So they have to forget themselves. Because this extreme activity, extreme focus is there, but there is no freedom. There is a helplessness. That's why after that, they have to descend themselves to a lower level. It could be drugs, it could be alcohol, it could be even things which may be worse. See, an example. This is with regard to one kind of this vikshipta state. Another more normal and more harmless kind of vikshipta state is, see, when we go to a temple, when you go to a church or a synagogue, or when we read a great mystical work, or listen to a great poem or wonderful music, mind is excited. Mind reaches a very high level of intense satisfaction, intense contentment. Wonderful tomorrow, this is wonderful, tomorrow will come again. When you reach your home, then another part of the mind creates stumbling blocks. So there is no continuity of the same interests. Here, two types of vrittis are coming into mutual conflict. So it is called vikshiptam. Vikshiptam means vividham, that is applied with a V, means different kinds of multiple vrittis, dividing themselves into two categories. One, helping you towards doing something which you want to do, higher ideal, and the other, preventing you from doing that at another stage. Maybe I will return home, well, I won't go to, I no more meditation. Again, next day you may come, meditate, begin after some time reaching, we leave the temple or church, the interest is gone. So, this is one kind of vikshipta state. So, Bhaswati, this Harigarananda Saraswati says, Kadachitkam chitta samadhanam samadhana chigishaya tattvajnana samadhanam chadrishyate. So, there is a kind of mental state when it becomes concentrated once in a while on some higher goal, and there is an aspiration to attain full concentration for a higher purpose, but then that sometimes gets blocked. I mean, like a pendulum of a clock which moves in one direction and then moves in the opposite direction, never remaining static in one state. It is called vikshipta state. This is the third condition of vrittis. So what happens? Mind or the mental system is full of vrittis. Normal human beings belong to this category. There are normal human beings have wonderful ideas, wonderful, they want to do wonderful things, but they are not able to do wonderful things, which I often used to explain in briefly, not in the context of yoga, as you know, the conflict, the eternal conflict between what you want to do and what you end up doing, what your intellect permits you to do and what your mind doesn't allow you to do. So, what is the negativity factor in this case? Again, vrittis which create habits, obsessions, which stand in the way of our doing what we want to do. Okay, fourth state is called egagra. Abhishta vishaye sadaiva sthiti sila chittavastha. The state in which the mind becomes fixed on an object of meditation. So, great spiritual seekers who are also made great contributions to art, literature, philosophy, mysticism belong to this category. They were able to keep themselves focused on one higher ideal on which they really wanted to focus. I mean, that means they have transcended or gone beyond the earlier state of vikshipta state, because in vikshipta state, mind doesn't allow you what you want to do. But in egagra state, that negativity is gone. Now, before going to the fifth state, called Niruddha state, which is what we are going to discuss in the 41st Sutra of Samadhipada. What I am discussing now is part of the discussion of the second Sutra of Samadhipada, but is directly linked to the subject or the topic of discussion in the 41st Sutra. It's called Kshina Vrittehe, it begins. It means how Kshina Vritti, how Vrittis become Kshina, means restrained, controlled, transcended. They won't bother you. So before reaching that state, we have to explain a little more about how to bridge the gap, how to attain a kind of declare, kind of ceasefire in this battle between mind and intellect, this conflict between what you want to do, something maybe higher, and what your mind eventually permits you to do. So one important method which I mentioned on many occasions earlier is our actions belong to 2-3 categories, but I am going to take up only 2 categories. One, mental actions, physical actions. Physical actions on which we have relatively some control, mental actions in which we do not have much of a control. You can't really program your own mind, but you can more or less program our physical habits. I mean, what time you get up in the morning, you can put an alarm, you can take bath, you can take a walk, you can go to this place, that place, you can drive, which highway you will take. All these are very much within your control. But what thought is going to emerge in your mind, or what thoughts you are going to oppose emerging in your mental system, you don't have much of a control. So, but then there is a connection between these two. What's the connection? Physical actions do have an effect and influence on mental actions. It may not be easily, it may not be obvious on the face of it. A person who goes on doing good physical actions, even though his mind may not be enjoying it, but still he goes on doing good actions, you find the mental resistance slows down in course of time. And when resistance goes down, it means conflicts are decreasing. A bridge is being formed connecting what you want to do and what your mind permits you to do. So a person who focuses on doing good actions at the physical level, on which you have some freedom, can eventually refine and process and purify his mental system. How does this happen? Actions produce vrittis. You cannot do anything without producing a vritti from that action. And good actions produce positive vrittis. And they decrease the weight of negativity. They decrease, they restrain, they decrease the weight, the intensity of negativity of mind. If a person forces himself or herself to do good things all the time, noble deed, good actions, without any evil purpose. Even with an evil purpose, if you do good deeds, even the negative effect of the evil purpose at the mental level will slowly decrease by the force of good actions you are doing. But it takes long time. It's just like eating one truckload of grass instead of drinking a glass of milk to get some good protein. You eat a truckload of grass, you may get a little protein. That's so continuous engagement in good activity will always have a positive effect on the mental system. So they produce positive vrittis, good vrittis, and these vrittis will help you to promote yourself to graduate into the fourth state of concentration, that is ekagra vritti. So the vikshipta, the conflict, decreases and you are able to concentrate on some higher things. This concentration by force of habits or interest may be good, but there is no freedom in it. As I mentioned, you know, people who are terribly interested in, let us say, in some noble, like research, scientific research, or creative writing, nothing wrong in it. But there is no freedom. Such persons always have the potential risk of deviating, falling to a lower level of value formations. But that concentration, when you attain that concentration with full freedom, then it is called ekagra state. This is the fourth state. So niruddha state is the fifth one. What is niruddha state? Sarva vritti nirodha praya chittavastha means a state of mind when all vrittis have been transcended, restrained and transcended. And this is called samadhi state. So one should not, there is one important point, remember, when we read this Patanjali Yoga system, and then you finish very wonderful, so let it go straight to Samadhi state or Dhirudha state, we should not get away with that. Remember, the journey in actual life is totally different from accepting or admiring a concept. Mind plays tricks. Frequently, when we appreciate a great idea, especially in spiritual life, there is a risk of our mind playing a trick on us. Mind deludes ourselves into thinking that what we appreciate is something that we have attained, not at all. We should remember that very well. So, a wonderful idea, a wonderful concept, so very good. That's fine. We should not think that we have actually attained to that state. But a great interest, in fact a great attraction for a great idea, itself is a positive indication that there are good vrittis in our mental system. Otherwise, you won't be able to appreciate. What you appreciate shows what kind of vrittis you have got in the mental system. It's very obvious. So, that's the state where being discussed in the 41st sutra. So, sutra is this kshina vrittehi. I mean, a person whose vrittis have become weakened or transcendent, completely restrained. Vrittis become like seeds, which you have boiled, cooked the seed, that seed, if you put on fertile soil, it will not sprout. So they are as good as gone. That is the state called Niruddha state. So all negative vrittis, all negativities can be transcended when we reach the Niruddha state. Now, how does it happen? So, if you bring a pure crystal into close proximity with a red flower, then you may think that the crystal is red in color. It's a pure crystal without any specific color as such. So, when it comes close to a red flower, it appears to be red. When it comes to blue flower, it appears to be blue. Complete identification. And complete identification is a sign of total pure concentration. And this concentration with freedom is called samapatti. Concentration without freedom is not samadhi. As I mentioned, concentration could be due to extreme interests in something. But there is no freedom. Children, for example, watching football, if you switch off the TV, they get agitated, they become unhappy. There's no freedom in it. You ask them to concentrate, to focus on something with the same degree of concentration, they complain they cannot concentrate because there is no freedom in it. So when concentration is attained with freedom, it is called, so there's a Sanskrit word used here, tadanjanata, means tanmayata. I mean, just like a crystal that comes close to a red flower, it appears to have become red, just like the red flower. But if you take it away from it, it's gone. So, as an example, as an analogy is given, tatstha tadjanada, it's a complicated word. Tatstha tadjanada samapatti. So, that's why those who are interested in the sutra meaning, you can remember. Kshinavrtehi chittasya. A chitta with its vrittis have become completely restrained, weakened. What does it mean? Niruddha state. All negativity gone. So, such persons can focus on whatever they want with full intensity. Somebody may ask the question, what about people like Napoleon Bonaparte? He needed only 2 hours sleep and he could sleep before the Battle of Auschwitz. He crushed the Prussians, the Battle of Auschwitz. I'm giving example from European history, that is the subject I taught. Oh, you read that there's a great Russian field marshal, Marshal Sukho, who was the one who defeated German forces, drove all the German forces across hundreds of thousands of miles all the way to East Berlin. He was a great military genius. You get such people. Full of concentration, absolute concentration. They could do that. In that kind of tanmayada, the same word, you know, tattasa tanjanada, means total concentration, identification, like a crystal appearing to become red crystal when it comes in close proximity with the red flower. So they could attain so much. In fact, there is a great theory, and in fact, in William James' writings, you find he tries to establish his doctrine that the line of demarcation between a genius and insanity is very thin, and if that is true, but I will explain this, and the line of demarcation between extreme concentration of a yogi, which is explained in the Nirudhasthita example, and the extreme power of concentration of people who are not yogis, but who have tremendous power of focus, that line also thin, but there is a great difference. Very thick, thin line, but it's very you cannot wish it away. In real yogi concentration, the yogi can reach this kind of concentration only when they are establishing yama and niyama, which you cannot speak in the context of Marshal Sukho or Napoleon Bonaparte. Yama and niyama means ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, abharigraha, shauja, sandosha, tapasya, adhyaya, isapadithana. So the most fundamental, universal, moral, ethical, humanistic, spiritual values are enshrined in these two concepts, yama and niyama, which in a way you find common in all the great religious spiritual teachers of the world. You find in Jesus Christ, you find in Buddha, you find in Shankaracharya, Sri Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, you find all great, or you find in Saint Teresa of Avila. Maybe the language in which they express these ideas, the vocabulary and the analogies could have been different because of the difference in the socio-anthropological conditions. But the yama and niyama are common in these higher concentrations, which you associate with great spiritual teachers in all traditions. So that's one important line of demarcation, distinction. So, because in their case, ekshina vritti, all negative vrittis have been subsided, transcended. But in these great geniuses, you know, genius also is some kind of obsession. It's kind of obsessive focus, concentration on one particular thing is what really we call genius. This is a fact. Then only because the mind focuses all its energy resources on a single activity or an ideal, then you excel in that idea and you call him a genius. But in the case of great artists, military generals or historians or intellectuals or creative writers who have reached this kind of concentration, there is no freedom. There is no yama and niyama. What is freedom? Freedom means they have full control over their thoughts, their actions, their mind, their personality, which is not true on these great people. It becomes obsessions. So, the hinavritti or niruddhasteta vrittis becomes possible only when you have fully established these fundamental moral ethical principles of non-violence, truthfulness, then total freedom from desire to possess things belonging to others, total freedom from greed and inner contentment, purity of mind and pure life, feeding the mind with positive spiritual ideas. These are fundamental disciplines which enable a yogi to reach this kind of niruddha state, where this means tanjanata tatstha tanjanata samapatti. This samapatti, this extreme concentration, sublime concentration, is attained by a yogi by first being fully established in yamas and niyamas, and then through the practice of the other stages, disciplines, which we already discussed earlier. Now we'll continue the discussion in the next class. We can have interaction. Questions are most welcome. We can ask questions. We have not finished this sutra. It takes more than 2-3 classes to complete the sutra.
Swami, we spoke of the past.
Yeah.
What is the Vedantic philosophy, more or less, of the future? I'm thinking of Sri Aurobindo, for example, speaks about mental states and supermental states and overmind and so on and so forth. So what is the evolution of the mind for the future of today?
Well, you know, I would rather limit myself to yoga and Vedanta, because in Aurobindo's system, there is a little deviation from the traditional Vedantic and yogic philosophy. So I would say, if you ask me the question, what does yoga have to offer to modern world, I would say the importance of yamas and niyamas. Even if you want to enjoy this world, to succeed and enjoy the fruits of the success, yamas and niyamas are necessary, because for mental health, real mental health, see, mental health is not possible without spiritual values. That's one important thing. You may or may not believe in a creator God or in religion as we normally understand by the word religion, but spiritual values are absolutely necessary for psychological health. So that's the great message from yoga philosophy we have to accept. So in fact, even to enjoy the fruits of all your labor, your attainments, we need psychological health. For that, even for physical health also. Control of food, for example, restraining ourselves, controlling our taste for food, taste or interesting things which may eventually be unhealthy for mind and body. We need yamas and niyamas. That's why. I think that's one of the reasons why Buddhism became very attractive. Buddha's eight values. These Buddha's teachings, Ashtanga Yoga, this middle way, you know, it is built upon the foundation of Yama Niyamas. It's nothing but Samyak Smriti, Samyak Vyayama, Samyak Ajiva, all these, Samyak Samadhi, all these are nothing but simple definitions of, explanations of Yama Niyamas. Even to preserve nature for ecological, speaking of ecological balance, conservation of nature, our own health, we need yama niyamas. Attainment of anything without yama niyama can be counterproductive, can create more problems than solving problems.
You know, when you were speaking about the mind, I was thinking of the thieves of the mind.
Thieves of mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking also of the Buddhist approach. It's the poisons of the mind.
Yeah.
But the thieves of the mind, staying within the... Thieves?
Thieves, yeah. Right, yeah.
Staying within the context of slavery, are the thieves making us live a life of slavery?
Asteya means non-stealing.
What's that?
See, one of the yamas, fundamental universal ethical values, asteya means non-stealing. That's freedom from greed, freedom from the desire to possess what doesn't belong to us. So that's the yoga ethical philosophy. Which could be a contribution to modern times. I think that's Buddhism has one advantage. Buddhism doesn't dabble with God or hell or hellfire or heaven and dividing people into believers and non-believers. So Buddhism is simple enough and is egalitarian. So it's a great attraction. But that's why, you know, Buddhism has taken on many of these teachings, most of his teachings from Yoga Sutra or Bhagavad Gita. And you find in the Dhammapada, which is the most important book, well-known book, which is many translations, the last verses of Dhammapada exactly like the 18 verses of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Almost the same. Bhagavad Gita says, he is the spiritually enlightened person fully in control of himself, Siddha Prajna, one whose mind is steady and stable, tranquil. And Buddha, in Buddha's teaching, the Dhammapada, they call Tam Buhi Brahmanam. So Brahmanam is Pali equivalent to Brahmanam. Brahmanam is a man of knowledge. Remember, Buddha is not talking about any caste group or anything. That should be understood very clearly. It means an enlightened person, spiritually self-controlled, enlightened person. Him I call a Brahmin, means a wise man, a wise woman. That's what Buddha says. That's how many of these verses in the Dhammapada ends. Siddha prajna stadochyade. Such a person is called Siddha prajna, a steady person, a spiritually enlightened person, a steady mind. Is such a person. The Gita says, and Buddha in the Dhammapada it said that him I call a wise man, a spiritually enlightened person. See? So you find many similarities. That's why I'm giving the example. I should come to that. Just 1 minute. You see, I'm giving the example of people whom the world admires for the great achievements, not in art or literature or philosophy or mysticism, but even the worldly achievements. For example, I give the example of military generals, Napoleon, who defeated the Prussians in the Battle of Austerlitz, or Shukko. I'm just giving an example of persons whom certainly even they won't themselves consider to be yogis. They were men of great achievements. But one important aspect you find among them, they are able to bring all their resources, physical, nervous, energy resources, mental resources, power of concentration, the powers of concentration on a single focus, so they could achieve great things. In fact, bringing all these powers of concentration on a single subtle idea with total freedom, without any negativity, with complete yamas nema, fully established yama nema, is called samabhati, as I mentioned here. So when a crystal, white crystal, is brought and kept near a red flower, that crystal appears to be a red crystal, Similarly, a great yogi, when he concentrates on some higher spiritual ideal, he can totally identify himself with that thing, like a crystal becoming red. So the similarity ends there. But in the formal example, worldly achievements also include this kind of identity, but there is no freedom, no yama nema. But the same concentration of all intellectual, mental, physical, energy, resources are found. There is no freedom, there is no yama nema. But the same power of concentration, when attained through meditation, through spiritual practices, through practicing yamas and nemas, takes you to higher sublime spiritual level. So there is these two possibilities are already there in our system. See, now in us, these two possibilities are there. We can reach the samapatti or we can attain great success. But there is no freedom in that, worldly success. Okay, please, you wanted to ask me?
Yes, I wondered if you could talk more about the cooked seed idea.
Oh yeah, the cooked seed, yeah. What it means is, when certain vrittis, when we transcend from the influence of certain vrittis, when we free ourselves from the influence of some undesirable habits, practices, from which we really want to come out of, when we actually become totally freed from their influence through this higher concentration called samadhi, samapatti or nirdha state, I mean where you are completely transcended with full freedom through yogic meditation, then those vrittis will be there, but you will be able to dissociate with them. They won't have, you can look upon them as alien. They don't belong to you anymore. Even if there is a habit or some ideas emerging from the mental system by the force of previous experiences, habits, they won't affect you because you'll be able to look upon them as if they are alien. I mean, they don't have any influence of corrupting mental system. The seeds cannot sprout. So they become a total, they are as good as stones. That's the idea behind. In fact, so the example of one disciple of Buddha, you know, his name was Angulimala. He had a robber, he was a cruel man. He was transformed by Buddha and he became a saint. But the neighbors did not know this man had become a saint. And he left the place, he meditated, then he came back to his native place. But the people among whom he lived as a robber did not know the transformation that had taken place, that has happened to him. So they took him to be the old robber, cruel monster. So they threw stones at him. They tried to assault him, but he did not react. So he may have felt the impulse of his previous activities, his cruelty, retaliation, but it didn't work. So there's a reference mentioned in the Pali canonic literature. This man could look upon the promptings of his own previous samskaras and witness them, look upon them as if they are alien, they don't belong to him. So the old habits, ideas may re-emerge in the mental system, but they won't have any effect. We'll be able to dissociate with them. That's the idea behind. So we'll continue the next session. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.